Technology is an integral part of our business and personal lives, affecting virtually everything we do and experience in some form or fashion.
Information security.
As CPAs, it's never been more important to be ahead of the technology curve.
Privacy management.
That's why the AICPA established the Top Technology Initiatives list, highlighting emerging technologies that'll contribute to the accounting profession.
Assurance and compliance. Mobile and remote computing.
Here on Episode 7, we're going to continue our privacy program with part two on generally accepted privacy principles.
GAPP, a comprehensive privacy compliance framework, is part two of a four-part Top Technology Initiatives podcast on privacy. In this episode, we provide an overview of the generally accepted privacy principles framework, what it is, how it is constructed, and the rationale behind it. Joining me today are Ev Johnson and Ken Askelson. Ev is the CPA and chair of the AICPA-CICA Privacy Task Force. He recently retired from Deloitte & Touche, where he was a partner in their enterprise risk services practice. He has more than 40 years of experience in audit, control, and security matters, and has served on a number of AICPA committees and task forces. Ev has also testified before Congress on consumer protection and privacy issues. Ken is the vice chair of the AICPA-CICA Privacy Task Force and the Senior IT Audit Manager for JCPenney in Plano, Texas. In addition to the Privacy Task Force, Ken has served on a number of other AICPA committees. He is a CPA, a Certified Internal Auditor, and a Certified Information Technology Professional. Ev and Ken, welcome to you both.
Ev, explain for us what the Generally Accepted Privacy Principles Framework is and what it seeks to accomplish.
Well, first off, Matt, in this podcast, we'll refer to Generally Accepted Privacy Principles as GAPP. So it doesn't get confused with GAAP, Generally Accepted Accounting Principles, or something like a GAAP analysis, which is GAP. So it's GAPP, GAPP. That being said, the GAPP framework consists of 10 privacy principles and 66 related criteria for privacy and the handling of personal information throughout an organization, or what we sometimes refer to as an entity, since it can be a business, a not-for-profit organization, a governmental unit, a university, and so forth. The GAPP framework incorporates concepts from domestic and foreign laws, regulations, guidelines, and other bodies of knowledge on privacy, and a lot of best practices. It was actually developed by a joint task force of the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Canadian Institute of Chartered Accountants, CICA, to help guide organizations in implementing, sustaining, and auditing privacy programs. CPAs and chartered accountants have had a long tradition of protecting the private information of their clients, and the framework was intended to help them and their clients address the complexities of implementing and sustaining an effective privacy program. And privacy is really one of a series of trust services offered by CPAs, which also includes security, process integrity, availability, confidentiality, and privacy. Now, sometimes privacy, confidentiality, and security get confused. Privacy actually deals with the protection of personal information or information that may not now but could be identified to a person, such as personal financial information or medical information or other information about individuals. Confidentiality, on the other hand, deals with the protection of all other types of information, such as business plans or trade secrets like the formula for Coca-Cola. Privacy is often governed by laws and regulations, while confidentiality is often not covered by laws and is typically governed by contracts. Many people have seen these non-disclosure agreements. That's an example of a confidentiality contract. Privacy also deals with the entire life cycle of information from the time it is obtained by an entity until it is destroyed. We refer to the steps in this life cycle as collection, use, disclosure, and retention. Security is the mechanism that helps protect information and is an essential component of privacy and confidentiality, but it's only one of many of the components needed for an effective privacy program.
Ken, Ev made some important distinctions between privacy and confidentiality and security, and also gave us some background information on the GAPP framework and how it came into being. Why is GAPP so important?
Well, Matthew, I believe many organizations are looking to see how privacy can be addressed in a manner that will have a positive impact on revenues and expenses. When a company implements a successful privacy program, it increases the trust with customers and employees. Many surveys have shown that customers are more apt to do business with an organization with good privacy practices compared to those organizations that do not offer good practices or provide customers privacy choices. In many respects today, customers are more aware and concerned about how organizations are using their personal information and expecting them to provide good privacy practices as a minimum business strategy. I think the bottom line is companies want to gain customer trust and meet their expectations in order to help drive sales, and having a good privacy program in place in that effort helps in that effort. On the other hand, however, bad things can happen and do happen. Privacy is a risk management issue that must be addressed. Some of the major threats include five significant areas that I would like to comment on. The first is regulatory sanctions and litigation. The example, I guess, would be the Federal Trade Commission has taken enforcement action against organizations where personal information was breached. That included penalties and fines in the millions of dollars and required organizations to obtain an independent security audit every 2 years over a 20-year period. In addition, companies are also faced with the potential of class action suits and industry sanctions as well. I guess good examples of that would be potential breach of contracts or agreements you may have with third parties in that context. Another area is the negative publicity an organization would be faced with. Most everyone has seen where data privacy breaches have charged to the forefront of media coverage in the past few years, which puts organizations in a difficult position to effectively communicate these privacy risks with customers and shareholders. When privacy breaches happen, the organization will undoubtedly take a reputational hit. Another threat is the financial losses an organization may incur. I think even in cases where an organization may not experience a material impact to revenue or market share as a result of a breach, they will likely incur significant expenses that were not planned nor anticipated in addressing a breach. Again, expenses to address privacy issues can run into the millions. A major privacy incident will likely create a significant disruption to the normal operations of an organization. In the event of a large breach, an enormous amount of corporate energy would be focused on the incident, not only from the efforts required by internal resources, but from the disruption outsiders would cause to the organization as well. And those outsiders likely would include law enforcement, regulators, forensic auditors, and other investigators that would come into the organization. And potentially the biggest threat of all is the distrust customers would have with an organization that does not handle their personal information as they expect. This could result in losing existing customers and not gaining new ones.
Ev, the GAPP framework mentions the rights and obligations of individuals and organizations with respect to the collection, use, disclosure, and retention of personal information, and really uses that as the definition for privacy. What are those rights and obligations? What are we talking about?
That's a good question, because everybody looks at it as something that the organizations have to do, and they don't think about the individual side. For individuals, you need to be aware of what the organization's privacy policies are, and you need to provide
accurate and appropriate information that is suited to the purpose for which the information is needed. You have to notify the organization of inaccuracies or changes in personal information that are being used. And while this is sometimes more applicable to organizations, you need to adhere to the applicable laws and regulations and other agreements with the organization. Now, from the organization side, you know, they have some rights and obligations as well. One obligation is to establish and communicate the privacy policy that it has and its commitments to the individual. Another is to provide choices or seek consent for the use of personal information. Another would be to collect, use, and retain and disclose personal information in accordance with its policy, privacy policies and commitments. Allow the individual to update and correct information that is used by the organization, and to protect the personal information from unauthorized use and disclosure, and to otherwise adhere to its own policies, applicable laws and regulations, and other agreements with the individual. We've actually defined an overall privacy objective to be: personal information is collected, used, retained, and disclosed in conformity with the commitments in the entity's privacy notice and with the criteria set forth in generally accepted privacy principles. In other words, if you're doing this, you got a pretty darn good privacy program.
As you mentioned, criteria set forth in the generally accepted privacy principles framework. Tell us a little bit how that framework is structured.
Well, the framework actually consists of several parts. So there's an introductory session that explains what privacy is all about. It then sets out 10 privacy principles with the specific criteria under each principle. As we've mentioned, there's 66 criteria, and they're organized under 10 principles. And these criteria set forth what needs to be done to achieve each principle. And then for each of the criteria, there are examples and illustrations that are provided as to how you might do that. So I think the next step would be to go out to the AICPA's website and download the GAP-P framework. That web address is www.aicpa.org/privacy. When you get to the website, you'll notice there are two versions of the framework, a practitioner's version and a business version. These are both the same, except the practitioner's version includes illustrative reports and other information about conducting a privacy audit and about providing other privacy services.
Ken, Ev mentioned that the GAP-P framework was comprised of 10 principles. Can you talk to us a little bit about the 10 principles? What are we talking about? What are they, and what do they entail?
Yes, Matthew. Let me give you a list of those 10 principles, and then after that, we'll go into more detail on what each principle requires. The first principle is management. The second is notice. The third principle is choice and consent. The fourth principle is collection. The fifth is use and retention. Number six is access. Number seven is disclosure. Number eight is security for privacy. Number nine is quality. And finally, number 10 is monitoring and enforcement. Let me cover maybe the first five, and then Ev can follow up with the second five principles. But there's a management principle that requires the entity to define, document, communicate, and assign accountability for its privacy policies and procedures. This principle considers the type of governance an organization provides over the collection, retention, disclosure, and protection of personal information. It also covers criteria for the organization to provide adequate resources and qualified personnel to implement a privacy program and handle personal information. Another principle is notice. Relating to this principle, The entity should provide notice about its privacy policies and procedures and identifies the purposes for which personal information is collected, used, retained, and disclosed. In some industries, such as financial services and healthcare, laws require businesses to provide notice to customers or patients. In other industries, such as the retail industry, the Direct Marketing Association requires its members to provide notice. If your organization conducts business internationally, keep in mind that many countries may have even stricter notice requirements. Another principle is choice and consent, where the entity describes the choices available to the individual and obtains implicit or explicit consent with the collection, use, retention, and disclosure of their personal information. It also addresses circumstances where the organization would repurpose the use of previously collected personal information. And to give you an example of that, if an organization originally collected customers' personal information to sell its own products or services, and then later decides to use that same information to sell other organizations for marketing purposes, this principle would require that the organization again go back to the individual to obtain implicit or explicit consent from customers for this new use. Another principle is the collection, and there the entity is required, as it collects personal information, only for the purposes identified in the notice and collection is done, and that collection is done in a fair and lawful manner. And then relating to use and retention, the entity should limit the use of personal information to the purposes identified in the notice and for which the individual has provided implicit or explicit consent. The entity retains personal information for only as long as necessary to fulfill the stated purposes. In this context, some federal laws and regulations recommend retention periods for certain records containing personal information. And I guess some examples would include guidance from the IRS on retaining tax information, and for sure the healthcare industry on retaining medical information on an individual. You should also be aware that some state laws provide retention guidance as well. I think by checking within your own organizations and your practices with retention, you may likely find that you are retaining personal information far beyond legal requirements or necessary for business purposes. And in such cases, an organization can reduce privacy risk by appropriately discarding this type of information.
Okay, I'll pick up with the second five, and the sixth principle is the access principle. And this really says that the entity needs to provide individuals with an ability to access their personal information for review and updating. This really allows individuals to review and correct errors in their information, and it really helps the entity, too, to help them be sure that their information about the individual is correct. The next one is the disclosure principle, and the entity really should disclose personal information to third parties only for the purposes identified in the notice and with the implicit or explicit consent of the individual. Now, this can be particularly important to some people who do not want their information shared with third parties. For example, if you go online and order some pots and pans, you may not want this information shared with a cookbook sales organization. On the other hand, some people don't mind this sharing. They would love to get the cookbooks, which is why we need the choice and consent principle that Ken described earlier. An important principle, and one I alluded to earlier, is the security, or what we call security for privacy principle. And this says that the entity should protect personal information against unauthorized access, both physical and logical, through the system. Security is the heart of privacy. Without security, the entity cannot ensure that personal information is protected. Although, as I mentioned before, having good security alone is not enough in itself to have good privacy. As you can see, there are nine other principles to be considered. The next principle is the quality principle. This really deals with the need that the entity has to maintain accurate, complete, and relevant personal information for the purposes identified in the notice. This is directed at ensuring proper information is used by the entity and avoiding problems with bad or out-of-date information. And then it addresses the issue that Ken mentioned of information that was collected for one purpose being used for something totally different and thereby subject to misinterpretation. And last but not least is a principle that we call monitoring and enforcement. The entity really needs to monitor compliance with its privacy policies and procedures, and it needs to have procedures to address privacy-related complaints and disputes. In fact, the complaint and dispute process often gives management of an entity a good idea of how they're doing. But the other monitoring procedures really need to provide assurance to management that their privacy policies are actually being followed.
Ken, earlier when Ev was discussing the GAPD framework, he mentioned that each of the 10 principles is associated with related criteria. Can you provide an example of GAP criteria that demonstrates the scope and relationship of the criteria to the overarching principle?
Now, let me try that, Matthew. Let me first mention that our intentions in identifying the criteria as we were developing GAPI, we wanted to make sure the criteria was, first of all, relevant to the principle, that they were complete in order to address privacy in a comprehensive manner, and that they were objective and measurable. We felt that these were necessary characteristics for making them useful for privacy professionals as well as for auditors performing privacy audits using GAPI. In addition, under each of the 10 principles, the criteria are organized in two categories. There are criteria in a policies and a communications category, as well as a procedures and controls category. So again, all the criteria, the 66 criteria that Ev mentioned previously, is all of those fall within those two different categories. Let me take you through one example using the notice principle. We have two criteria under the policies and communications section. The first criterion requires that a company establishes policies relating to notice. The follow-up to that is the second criterion, which requires the organization to communicate its privacy policy, its privacy notice to individuals. In the case of an online retail business, it is pretty common practice to provide a link to an organization's privacy notice. In other circumstances, you may receive the notice in the mail, and who hasn't received a notice from your financial institution or, for that matter, your insurance company? Relating to the procedures and control category, under the notice principle, there are three criteria. The first covers the provisioning and timing of notice. And in this case, the individual should be provided notice at or before personal information is collected. Second criterion requires the organization to provide a description of the entities and activities that are covered by its notice. So if the business is an online business, for example, that they describe that as such, or if they have a bricks and mortars operation and an online business and a catalog distribution center, those types of businesses, those should also be defined within the scope of the notice. And then the third criterion requires the notice to be conspicuous, and not only conspicuous, but use clear language so a person really understands what the organization's privacy notice and policy consists of. And I think this gives you an example of the five criteria under the notice principle, but keep in mind the other nine principles have the same structure, but the number of criteria for each of the principles do vary. So depending on each principle, there is various numbers of criteria for each of the principles.
And the criteria that, that Ken just described seems to give organizations a certain amount of leeway with respect to the specifics of how each principle is addressed. Why give organizations this kind of latitude as opposed to maybe mandating more specific measures?
Well, in a nutshell, I think the criteria were designed to tell you what needs to be done, but not how to do it. For each criterion, there are examples and illustrations that demonstrate how the criterion can be met. But an organization can use any approach to achieve that. For example, the criteria indicate that you should be given choices about how your information can be used, shared, and so forth. But because they need to be applied in many situations, these criteria do not specify what the choices should be or how they should be worded or things like that. That's up to the organization. And that's one of the reasons this framework has been viewed as probably more business-like than some of the other regulations and things that are out there.
So flexibility is definitely an advantage for this framework. What are some of the other advantages for the GAPP framework?
Oh, boy, there are probably too many to mention in the time remaining, but let me mention a few. First, if you're just getting involved with privacy, the framework is a great starting point for learning. It pulls together a lot of information from various laws and regulations into a concise, logical, and business-focused framework. For organizations that don't know where they stand with privacy, it's an excellent tool for benchmarking. You can really see very quickly where an organization's privacy program stands and where it needs improvement. At the other extreme, for organizations with a very mature privacy program who would like a privacy audit to demonstrate to their customers and business partners or regulators or anyone else for that matter that they have good privacy, the GAPP framework provides a testable criteria for an audit report.
Ken, the 10 principles and 66 related criteria that is included in GAPP make it an extremely comprehensive framework. How does a business take this framework and use it to address the issue of privacy within their organization?
Matthew, let me maybe start that off with maybe just a discussion around how we used it within our organization. One use was of GAPP was to help us develop our internal privacy risk assessment. Our privacy risk assessment team was made up of various groups within our organization, and we relied on GAPP to provide guidance in developing the criteria and so forth on what we would look at within our assessment. And as Eb mentioned previously, that we also used it for benchmarking purposes against our existing privacy policies and procedures to again identify gaps or changes that may be necessary within our environment. We also used it as an internal training tool for our privacy professionals as a document representing good privacy practices. We shared this information internally with several of these professionals with the idea of, again, making sure that we recognized and acknowledged the good privacy practices that GAPP provides. In addition, our internal audit department used it as a resource for developing its privacy audit programs for areas where we collect personal information. So, and that was very helpful in that area. And then GAPP would also be a great resource for organizations that are just starting to develop a privacy program as well, as previously mentioned by Eb, depending on where the organization is in their life cycle with privacy and privacy programs, that would be a great framework to establish and get started with framework.
Eb, earlier in the podcast, you mentioned that the GAPP framework was a way to address disparate domestic and international privacy standards and bridge the differences. What are some of the standards that you were referring to, and how does GAPP relate or compare to other international and domestic privacy concepts?
Well, when we developed GAP-P, we looked at the privacy laws in Europe, which are based on something called the EU Privacy Directive. There are a lot of variation, but the EU Privacy Directive kind of set the minimum that had to be included in each country's laws, at least the EU countries. We also looked at Canada, Australia, the principal laws in the United States, which at that time were the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act for financial institutions and HIPAA for healthcare. And we looked at several other countries. Most of these laws were based on something called fair information practices, which were developed by the OECD many years ago, and really became the basis for our 10 principles. We also took a look at what businesses with an effective privacy program were doing and identified a number of business considerations and best practices.
Have Ken discussed the use of GAP-P by businesses and how they could employ the framework. What about practitioners? How might a practitioner take and use the GAP-P framework?
Well, here's what I would suggest. First, as I mentioned before, go out to the AICPA's website. Again, that's www.aicpa.org/privacy, and download a copy. It's free. After you become familiar with it, you might pick a receptive client, or you might try this on your own practice, and work with the client or your own people to do a high-level benchmark of the privacy program. I think you'll find this is a good way to get your feet wet, and you'll start to see many possibilities to serve your clients better.
Ken, I've mentioned that the GAP-P framework was available for free download off of the AICPA's website. What other kind of resources are available for those entities looking for privacy guidance and looking to implement GAP-P-based privacy policies and procedures?
I think I agree with Ev's comments earlier, Matthew. The AICPA provided us a good resource for various privacy materials. They had information such as an incident response template that was very useful as a reference and resource. They had some privacy risk assessment questions and a questionnaire that we utilized in our own internal privacy risk assessment. So we found those very helpful and useful. Other resources also includes some professional locations such as the International Association of Privacy Professionals. That's at www.privacyassociation.org. That organization is has a lot of resources available relating to this topic as well. And for regulatory type of information, the Federal Trade Commission also has a website devoted to their privacy initiatives and enforcements, and that can be found at www.ftc.gov/privacy. Other sources are sites such as the Electronic Privacy Information Center is an online guide to various privacy resources. And in addition, the IIA, the Institute of Internal Auditors, has what they call a Global Technology Audit Guide that covers the topic extensively as it relates to managing and auditing privacy risks. So would become a very useful resource and tool for privacy professionals in an organization as well as the internal audit department that would want to address the privacy risks within their organizations.
Ev, how about for the practitioner looking to establish a privacy practice? What kind of resources are available for them?
Well, the AICPA's website has lots of information for CPAs who want to start a privacy practice and for those who are already offering these services to their clients. One good example is a guide to building a privacy practice in a small and medium-sized CPA firm. Another is frequently asked questions about privacy services. In fact, if you go out there, there's a whole page listing all the different resources for practitioners. I believe there are many good opportunities out there for CPAs to help their clients with establishing good privacy that's good for business. For CPAs in a business or government, the GAPP framework can be an excellent tool to assess and help improve your organization's privacy program. Go check it out.
So there's a number of great resources out there for both practitioners and businesses. I encourage our listeners to visit the AICPA's Privacy Center at www.aicpa.org/privacy. Evan, Ken, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Top Technology Initiatives podcast. Be sure to join us next time on Episode 8, where we continue our program on privacy and how it affects CPAs in public practice. And if you're looking for more information on the top technology initiatives, go to www.aicpa.org/toptech. That's aicpa.org/TOPTECH. Or if you have any questions for us, email us at toptech@aicpa.org. This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA is not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA makes no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assumes no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and expressly disclaims all liability for such damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.